Hello everyone, I'm Rory Catlin-Jones, and before we get underway with the last episode of this series, a mailbag edition, we wanted to bring you up to date with a couple of things that have happened since we recorded it. And with me, I've got a dynamic duo, Gillian and the Judge, to help. Now, Gillian, you were the driving force behind the Parkey Charter, which we took to Downing Street a few weeks ago. But since then, we've had a really important meeting. So explain what happened.
We have indeed. We met with Victoria Atkins, who's the Health Secretary, and we were all really genuinely very surprised at how interested she was in the issue. You know, we're a bunch of hardened hacks on the whole, plus the judge, who I think would qualify as a hardened judge. I don't know what the phrase is there. And we were all expecting very little indeed. So maybe our expectations were too low. But what happened was that we went in. I was off, actually.
You froze.
I froze. I had to almost be forced into the room. And she was terribly embarrassed because it was on the ninth floor. We had to go past various desks to get to the room where it was happening. And by the time I got there, you know, I was so exhausted. So I think there she was very embarrassed about that. And she genuinely wanted to sort of listen to what we had to say. So that gave us sort of a head start in a way, which was both fortunate and unfortunate. But I thought she seemed genuine. She seemed interested. And I was most impressed that she wanted to ask some intelligent questions instead of those obvious ones. So, for example, when we said there are too few neurologists, I mean, that is pitiful. 44th out of 45 countries in Europe we are in terms of the number of neurologists per head. She wanted to go right back and find out why is that? You know, why are people not becoming neurologists?
And she had her civil servants in the room and she gave them tasks.
Exactly. Each minion got something to do. So, and then this was the bit where you could have knocked us all over. She said she'd like to meet again. And we all thought she'll say in the winter when they obviously won't be in power anymore. But no, she said in the summer she wants to meet. And it was her instigation. So I'm very keen to actually see a date out of them for that.
It was a bit dispiriting how poorly briefed she'd been there.
She had been very poorly briefed. And Caroline, head of Parkinson's UK, pointed out, she was with us, that it's pitiful that they don't know the numbers and the issues themselves. We shouldn't have had to bring it up.
They don't even know how many people have got Parkinson's.
Or where they are.
But I think that, doesn't that mean that we have an opportunity here? Because if they're so badly briefed on these sorts of illnesses, then if we make a noise and we start shouting and they are willing to listen, then that really gives us an opportunity here.
Now, we had an episode earlier in the series on benefits and the hoops that parkies have to jump through to get them. And Nick, the Judge, Mostyn, there have been a number of developments which you have found disturbing, haven't there?
Yes, a few days ago on the 19th of April, in a major speech, the Prime Minister unveiled what he called as a package of welfare reform measures to tackle the unprecedented rise in economic inactivity and to ensure our benefit system is better targeted at those who need it most. So what they want to do is basically, so far as parkies is concerned, there are two aspects which are of great concern. First is the proposal to reform entirely the fit note process, which the Prime Minister insists in calling the sick note process, to take away the ability to write fit notes away from GPs and to give it to a specialist agency who will no doubt be hard-nosed and trained to have as their default position a refusal. And of course, they won't be the people who actually know the person who's applying for the fit note. And I can see that for those parkies who work, but who because of the nature of their condition, have to ask for fit notes from time to time. I mean, it's in the nature of things. This is going to be a very retrograde step. The second...
PIP, right?
You know, really concerning about PIP.
So PIP, if people remember, is the personal independence payment.
Independence payment, yes. A non-means tested, non-taxable cash payment, which is based on an assessment of the functional needs of the claimant.
Yeah.
It is not based on your condition. It's based on your needs, irrespective of what your condition might be. Okay. And that is what it always has been from the moment of its origin in 2013. They want to change this to make it, first of all, condition-based, so that they'll have a list of conditions. They made it absolutely clear that the one thing they really want to take away is where the cause of the impairment is psychological. They want to take that away. They had a go back in 2017. You remember I spoke about that. And
yes, I do remember.
They really want to remove psychological causes. And I just don't understand why a psychological cause isn't just as valid a reason for seeking a personal independence payment as a physical cause. But the fact is that the amount of money that is being spent on pips is going up, and it's expected to double in the next 5 years to reach nearly £30 billion. But if that is the consequence of the law that exists at the moment, then so be it. That's just one of the things that the taxpayer has to suck up. And it's not as if these people haven't made their contributions through their taxes. Anyhow.
Just to rebalance that a little, isn't there, though, some good news in the announcement? I saw something suggesting that they may be looking at the issue of a passport that we've raised, not because we've raised it, but because it's on the agenda in any case, because a lot of the charities have been talking about it for a long time.
OK, well, that's all we've got time for. Thank you both. Now, let's get on with this week's episode. Poddo. You're listening to Movers and Shakers, a podcast about living with Parkinson's. The show is sponsored by Judge Nick Mostyn's Old Chambers and by the generous contributions of private donors. Hello and welcome to Movers and Shakers. And once again, we're in the pub. I'm Rory Catlin-Jones, and with me around this very cramped table are...
Jeremy Paxman.
Mark Mordell.
Paul Mayhew Archer.
Gillian Lacey Solomar.
Nicholas Mostyn.
And this week, our subject is you. We've been sifting through the mountains of emails, website comments, telegrams, and other misses you sent us, and we've chosen some of the very best and most thought-provoking. We're going to read out two each, so seconds out, round one. Gillian, the driving force behind our parky charter, kick us off.
Well, I've got one about the very first point on our parky charter, which is about speedy specialists. We feel that we've been all, I think, collectively really shocked at the fact that people just can't see specialists around the country. And one of the first things we're calling for is that that should come to an end. This is from Heather Ireland. She says, "We're 99% certain that my husband has Parkinson's. Our GP referred him to see a neurologist in July 2023. We are still waiting," she says. "I phoned the relevant hospital to be told there was a 38-week wait."
Oh, God.
"But wait a minute, not to be seen, but to come top of the list to be offered an appointment at a future date."
Oh, God.
I mean, what do you do? It's just hopeless, hopeless.
A 38-week wait to get to the top of a queue before you join another queue.
Exactly, exactly. And God knows, you know, she says we're frustrated and despairing. I mean, despairing is a very strong word, and I'm not surprised at all. She says, "We're sorry to sound so negative and acknowledge there are many people who are also in our position but don't know where else to vent our spleen, so to speak. Good place to vent it here, and I really hope we're successful in this one."
What you've missed out is the line where she says, "Needless to say, due to the increase in severity of symptoms, we have made an appointment privately."
You're right, I have missed that out. And that's what happened to you, Nick, wasn't it?
Yes, that happened to me. I went private for the initial appointment, got one when I wanted, and then was very, very lucky to be accepted back into the NHS.
This is basically covert privatisation.
It is, isn't it? You wonder whether it's deliberate, and even if it's not deliberate, they're probably not that disappointed.
But even if you get an appointment, that's not the end of it, because there was someone in Oxford who recently got in touch to say that they'd got an appointment, and then the appointment's been moved back twice, so that they're actually now going to be seen in June 2025.
Oh, my goodness.
So they've got a two-year wait, and they're already finding that they want to change their medication.
So no wonder we're putting that as number one in our charter.
But someone I spoke to said the importance is to keep badgering. Just because someone offers you that appointment, you don't have to accept it, and you can say...
But, I mean, the whole system's so flawed in that they won't even talk to you, so... You know, they just send you a date through the post, which you can do or can't do. And then you have to ask for another date and then another date if it's not one that you can make. So nobody actually talks to you anymore about anything.
Now, Mark, your turn. You've got another message, which is something to do with the charter.
Yeah, that's why the charter's so needed. It's a message from Linda, who's a carer for her husband. "The charter made me cry. Everything in it is a must. Care for people with Parkinson's and their carers is so sketchy. Everything is so hard work. Prescriptions from GPs. Identifying deterioration with everyone presenting differently is a nightmare. Visits to A&E or admitted onto a ward, nightmare. Perhaps training the NHS from the top to the bottom of the NHS should be a must." So that's why we want the charter, why it's, I think, absolutely vital. But I did also want to read one out from somebody who said they couldn't sign the charter, they objected to it, and they were saying that the NHS is very strapped for cash, and they go on, "Of course, it's not a competition, but every chronic illness in this country is crying out for more cash, more specialist staff. bigger piece of the cake, even though we know there are already only crumbs left. I don't think that's a good reason for stopping saying
no. That doesn't seem to have any logic at all, because you've it seems to me even more important that we fight our corner if the size of the cake is shrinking.
We generally are quite a big, important, as it were, condition with a very small voice.
Exactly. Yes.
I think we're a Cinderella. I mean, you can see why heart disease and cancer have such a big voice, because they are the biggest killers. But I think we're a Cinderella because it's not curable at the moment, and because it doesn't kill you. And I think those two things make it difficult in the charity sector.
And unsexy, you know. Someone but it is a competition, isn't it? They say it's not a competition, but it is. You know,
and that's the way the charities behave, whether you like it or not, and we've got to be in there.
Someone told me it's very important to be polite at all times, be very polite, but to get people on your side. So copy in your MP when you're writing to them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Nick Mostyn, Nick the Judge Mostyn, you put together what turned out to be a surprisingly cheerful episode about palliative care and the legal arrangements for our demise. We were all a bit gloomy, but we ended up rather enjoying it, and so did the listeners. And you got an email.
It wasn't exactly gallows humour. It was we approached the question of our ending in a positive way. And as a result, I got this excellent email from a young doctor called Alex. I'm a junior doctor. I've been interested in elderly and palliative care for a few years, but more recently I've started working in Parkinson's. I started listening to the show as a way to try and understand the perspective of people living with Parkinson's, and I've really enjoyed it, as well as learning a lot. But this week's palliative care episode was my favourite yet. I talk to people with Parkinson's a lot about palliative care and advanced care planning, and I felt in your episode you perfectly summarised the worries and preconceptions people often have. Your guest did a great job of explaining and trying to break down what palliative care and advanced care planning are really about. I will definitely be pointing people in the direction of this episode. A massive thank you for all that you do. As a doctor, I've learned so much from your podcast, and it's changed the way I practice.
I have to say, I've got a great friend who's a palliative care consultant, and she bigged us up on Twitter. She thought this was the top episode. So,
yeah, but you've got to stop writing these letters yourself.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, on that matter, I've given you a really terrible job reading another letter praising the judge's episode.
Indeed, yes. This is a letter which says that the judge, among others, I mean, frankly, that says here for the others. It was a great episode, it said. I really liked the emphasis on this being liberating. And an opportunity for people to make sure their wishes were being respected. As Judge Mostyn, here you go again.
As Judge Mostyn highlighted at the end, doing some of this planning in advance means when the end does come, the focus can be on comfort, dignity, and doing what you love, rather than talking about finances and so on. So the judge has his uses, I suppose. But
I was lucky to get it past the censor that particular episode. Rory thought it was going to be dead boring law in action stuff, but in fact, it.
Well, we did have to at one stage in one episode stop you from reading out an entire judgment, which we felt was not that entertaining. But there we are. So, Paul, what have you got?
Well, amidst all the praise for us, I have found some criticism.
What?
I have. Yes, this is from Naomi, who says, "Now listen to this." We all listen to your podcast, but I find myself getting annoyed that only the milder end of the Parkinson's experience is explored in any detail. Can you devote some episodes to the later stages of Parkinson's and include mention of the most severe symptoms in every episode? For example, what tech interventions are aimed at helping those people? What's discussed in their doctor's visits? Do sleep or depression get worse for them? What type of exercises can they do? Are their partners burnt out? How can they participate in support groups when they can't move independently and cannot speak easily? I think it was Gillian Lacey Solomar, she says, who told a story about attending her first support group, seeing people in wheelchairs and thinking, this isn't for me. She commented that those people weren't at subsequent groups, but didn't explore why or even see it as potentially concerning. Please don't wait until one of you reaches that stage before you start regularly including them in this conversation.
I think that's a bit unfair. I would have thought an episode about palliative care and death is pretty much focusing on the later stages of Parkinson's, wouldn't you?
Yes, but I suppose
just got to carry on doing this until we all peg out.
Tune in to episode 558.
Tune in to find who's still there.
I think that person does have a point. I mean, I shy away from the darker side.
Yeah. But it's partly because we're a bit frightened of it, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
absolutely,
that
stage.
It's horrible. Yeah.
Nemi's hit the nail on the head.
I'm going to do what I did before with the embarrassing things. I'm going to do an episode about the last stages. The later stages are something we have, and I've had Parkinson's for 14 or 15 years, so I suppose I'm near it.
No, well, you're there, I'm afraid, already.
I'm there, oh God almighty.
No, and so am I. And I was so shocked to find that. I was reading something which said that you wouldn't have DBS unless you have advanced Parkinson's. And I said to Mike, do I have advanced Parkinson's? Oh, and he looked at me as though I was an idiot and said, of course you do, yes. Nick, you're not there yet, but I think a lot of
I did make the point on the World This Weekend that we Parkinson's sufferers will not qualify for assisted dying, because nobody will give us a terminal illness. So yeah.
Should definitely do a piece of
this
that.
This is even Lord Faulkner's bill,
which will probably be passed, will not have intolerable suffering as the criterion. It will have a terminal illness, but they'll never give us a terminal illness diagnosis. So I think we could probably do an episode about that.
Definitely.
So in this first round, it's finally my turn. I've got a letter in defence of the neurologist breaking the bad news. And it's from Neil, who used to be an ophthalmic surgeon until Parkinson's put an end to his career. And he says he was used to breaking bad news in that job. I was diagnosed with PD in 2015 and it put an end to my career as an ophthalmic surgeon. I'm fully acquainted with the business of breaking bad news to people with irretrievable sight loss. My reason for writing relates to your almost unanimous negative experience of how the diagnosis of PD was communicated to you by the neurologists. Breaking bad news is difficult clinical work, emotionally draining, requires sensitivity and patience, and the poor neurologist is being confronted by his or her own impotence again. On the day of my appointment, there were at least a further half dozen patients in the waiting room, some shaking uncontrollably, another drooling in his wheelchair where he was writhing with athetoid movements. That's a word I haven't seen before. Yet another was spilling his tea, which he was trying to drink from a sippy cup. All of them had at least one haggard and exhausted-looking carer with them. So, I mean, what he's basically saying is, it's difficult for the neurologist. They're only human. We should give them a break, which I suppose is fair.
He's saying they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't.
But I think he's more saying that there is such pressure on the neurologists. There aren't enough of them. You've got to understand that they may be having a bad day as well.
Yeah.
Although, frankly, it's difficult to be forgiving if it's the day that you are diagnosed.
You know, it changes your life, doesn't it? It doesn't change their lives. So it's an everyday occurrence for them.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, I mean, Oscar, my son, who's doing medicine at the moment, very subtly, tried to persuade him to become a neurologist. I think he's not going to, because he says it is just bad news, followed by bad news, followed by bad news.
Yeah.
Everything else, people recover, but from this, people don't recover.
No.
Which is very sad, really.
Let's move on to our second round of letters, starting this time with Mark. We did an episode recently on getting your drugs on time in hospital, something which we didn't know much about beforehand. I have to say the reaction was extraordinary. I have lots and lots of letters about that. What have you got, Mark?
Well, this is from Mary, and she says, as the wife of a person without advanced PD, can I put in a plea for more awareness of the problems PD sufferers face if they go into hospital, messing up their medication? She goes on, I stopped two different nurses, one in a hospital, the other in a care home, from giving my husband a slow-release capsule when it should have been the normal pink and blue Medipar. How many times did it happen when I was not there to stop it? No wonder his brain was all over the place. Talk to any group of people with PD and there will be numerous accounts of disasters or near disasters. A consultant actually said to me when I told him this, yes, that is a problem. I'm so pleased that some high-profile people are bringing this condition into the public gaze. I'm just sorry that they've got it. As you say, so many people have written in to say, yes, they share this experience. And however much we bang on about it, however much Parkinson's UK campaign on it, nothing seems to be done.
Well, one of the problems, and I didn't realise this, apparently turning up with your pills neatly separated, as I do, into one of these little containers out of their packaging is a complete no-no. They've got rules against that. They need to see what box they came out of. I have to say, I insisted when I was in hospital on having my own pills.
You took your own pills in a bag.
Yeah.
And that's exactly and a
very large number of trusts don't allow that.
Yeah.
And NHS England refused to enforce it.
Are they going to search you?
Well, I don't know. I guess if
you're under treatment, mercy, you're having other drugs, and they say, you know, we've got to be in charge, which would be all right if they then did a good job, but they usually don't do a good job.
And NHS England are very adverse to telling people they must reach certain standards. They say, let the best practice float to the top and the rest will follow. Doesn't happen.
Our expert on the episode about this was very clear that you should take your own drugs. But if you say that they don't allow it, then you could end up in a sort of bitter confrontation with the staff, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is,
The last thing you want, yeah. Because you might be having some serious treatment.
Yeah, you
but you will be having some serious treatment.
Surgery.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nick, what's your second choice?
I have got a very gratifying letter from a parkie called Patch Bennett, who is the sales manager of a ski company in Canada, who is so inspired by our podcast that the company is going to sponsor our show. Now, I want to take the opportunity of saying how hugely grateful we all are to our sponsors, without the generosity of whom there would not be a podcast at all. So whether it's Boardwave or whether it's my old chambers and a throng of really kind private donors who have been incredibly generous, as I say, there would not be a show. So I think a quick round of applause for our sponsors.
How come a skiing company in Canada?
No, yes, because they were the company that I've been with once, twice.
Are you skiing?
I've been skiing, but not this time. Because
on helicopters?
Yes, not this time. But in my discussions with them, I discovered that he was a parkie. So being pushy and sharp elbows like me, I asked him if he'd sponsor the show, and he said he would. So
they give you a free holiday?
No free holiday. I paid for that. He said, hi, Team Movers and Shakers. I'm a fellow parkie, a regular listener of the podcast from across the big pond in Western Canada. You all do such a fantastic job, even Jeremy. I'm sure he means especially Jeremy. Keeping this sometimes heavy topic light, fun, and most of all informative. Now that you've been voted the best, so he's referring to our great victory in the recent competition for the podcast of the year, I must say, without even a mention of ballot rigging, the company that I work for, CMH, and our UK agent, Pure Powder, see this as a great opportunity to become a sponsor.
Other powder ski companies are available.
They are, but to help you continue to educate and push reform that can make the life-changing news easier to someone who for the first time hears the three words, you have Parkinson's. Keep up the great work, and the next round is on me. So I was particularly gratified by that letter because it not only promises funds to enable Series 4 to get going, but it also demonstrates the global reach of our show. And in that regard, I thought I'd mention, I'm sneaking in a third letter, a short message from a retired judge in New York. A retired judge in New York who tells me the show has been a real inspiration.
Does he do heavy skiing?
No, she doesn't. Has been a real inspiration and help to several friends of ours with Parkinson's. It is having a wide influence in the USA.
Excellent.
So
legal skiing community.
No, she's not a skier. This one is not definitely not a skier. She was a judge for 25 years in the administrative court in New York, and she tells me that it's influential on the other side of the pond. So that was a gratifying couple of letters.
Excellent. It's my go now. We had an episode which Paul had wanted to do for ages about embarrassing aspects of Parkinson's. The rest of us, let's say, were dubious about this, but actually it turned out to be full of fascinating stories. But Jane wrote in feeling let down.
Oh, dear.
3 years diagnosed. The worst thing so far, in capital letters, is constipation. However, I was disappointed with this episode because there was plenty of acknowledgement of constipation, but not much practical help.
What about the whole Gillian's...
Yeah. Wait. Listen to the rest of it. Listen to the rest of it.
We have from Gillian.
Yeah, listen to the rest of the letter. I've recently been recommended magnesium supplements by a very helpful Holland and Barrett employee, and this plus Gillian's recommendation to distend my stomach has massively helped.
Yes.
Please can you revisit this horror of Parkinson's disease with more experts and tips, as it seems all parkies worry about this more than anything else.
Constipation hour.
Yeah, you don't need to contribute yourselves. Do you know, Jane, I don't think we're going to be doing a whole hour.
I think a whole hour of crap fest would be too much.
Yeah. Gillian, what's your...
We've probably got over the last one.
I know. Yeah, no.
May I pick up and move us away very quickly from constipation? Back to sport. I love this one. This comes from Angela, and she says, at the age of almost 50 and 1 year into my diagnosis, I've rediscovered roller skating. She says, I realise that may be somewhat counterintuitive, given that for me one of the big issues is tremors and general unsteadiness, but a friend suggested it, and it was an itch I needed to scratch. It's been a revelation and it's quite exhilarating, not to mention an excellent way to stay fit whilst having fun. I think that maybe concentrating on not falling over shifted my focus and helped my balance tremendously, as well as improving my confidence. I wear plenty of padding. If I fall over, I simply get back up and carry on. Appreciate it's not for everyone, but I wanted to say to anyone who's coming to terms with their diagnosis that while you should know your limitations, you should also not let it discourage you from trying new things. be brave, she says, which I think is magnificent.
That is magnificent.
And it's the marvelous. Reason I chose, there were two reasons I chose. The first one was a very, very personal reason, because my mother, who passed away about 3 years ago, suddenly decided when I was a teenager that she was going to rollerblade to work. And she was a biochemist who worked at the John Radcliffe Hospital. I almost died of embarrassment. She would rollerblade for an hour from our house to the John Radcliffe, and I was about 13, I think. So that was very important to me because I felt a complete idiot now.
I can't imagine anything more embarrassing for a 13-year-old.
It was dire. I kept thinking, what if one of my school friends sees her?
This is a level above the embarrassing parents dancing, isn't it?
Oh, far yeah. above. And then the second reason was about sport, because if I can give a little plug here for ping pong plug. I have been asked, and this is quite remarkable, and I think he's completely bonkers, but somebody called Andy, and I don't know his last name because he's in my phone as Andy Ping Pong, has asked me to be his partner in ping pong, his doubles partner, which would not be so remarkable, except that he is the England champion.
Oh.
What do you think of that?
That's great.
So it's a pro-am you're going in.
Well, can I
make my own boast? I've just been invited by the Parkinson's Walking Football Team, which plays at the Emirates at Arsenal every Wednesday.
So how did you get asked to that?
They've invited me along to give a talk to them, and they say I can join in if I wish. But it is at the Emirates,
richness here. You're going to be playing with the England
champion, seen me play yet.
Table tennis champion. You're going to be playing at the Emirates.
Oh, whiff-waff.
Whiff-waff.
Whiff-waff, yeah. Yes. Jeremy, I made you read a rare fan letter
Not
about
that
the
rare.
Judge. So it's only, fair to give you a chance to read one about yourself from Claire.
Yes, Claire says, I'm so glad the podcast is back. I love Jeremy. He reminds me of my parky husband. All these years, all the money, and they haven't come up with any answers, wishing they had.
Whistling in the wind. She thinks her husband is as miserable an old bugger as you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, she does say, you make her smile. Yeah. Which
That's my wife.
Yes. And finally, Paul, have you got something to make our hearts sing?
I have, yes. It's from lovely Debbie. I just wanted to thank you so much for the podcast. It prepared me for what was to come. And the episode I've just listened to spoke of the lack of knowledge when first diagnosed or the loss of where to turn. The podcast is definitely the first thing anyone newly diagnosed should listen to, as it gently leads you to resources that you can investigate at your own pace. And it leaves you with the knowledge of where to go as and when you are ready for more information. I have already signed up to take part in research and have a library of exercises and notes on nutrition. I am finding the podcast practical, and they have helped me to see the positive, even humorous side to PD. And no criticism at all.
It's all been worthwhile.
It's been a bit of a self-congratulation fest, hasn't it? Particularly for you.
I'm sorry, I haven't been anywhere near the Emirates, or anywhere near as high as the Emirates. Ping pong with the national table tennis champion, I feel a pygmy amongst giants here.
Okay, well, I think that's our lot. Thanks to all those who wrote in. Keep the emails coming. Don't forget, it's feedback@moversandshakerspodcast.com. Now a change of tone. Listen to this.
The world has split in two. To keep it close and never land, I lace the clouds at my feet. I put all stars in my pocket. With the tides I soar, I thank the winds of before. One more time I spin it around, this never ending day I found. I catch the sunset and never let go.
Now that is one piece of music from Tremors vs. Tremors, a pioneering project where people's Parkinson's tremors are recorded and turned into music. To tell us more, we're joined by the man who's led that project, Dr. Christian Lambert, consultant neurologist at Queen's Square and University College London. Hello, Christian.
Hi. Thank you.
So what is that about?
So I spend most of my time researching what makes Parkinson's so variable. How it came about really is we were approached by a group in Ocean in Berlin who had done some previous work recording tremors and then 3D printing them onto objects to kind of encapsulate how the tremors impacted people's daily basis. And they wanted to try and take the idea to music.
They're a kind of artistic group?
Yes, they're an artistic group. And it sort of struck me instantly as a really unique way of trying to communicate and convey the individual nature of Parkinson's, how it affects both the visible and invisible, and try and get across this sort of diverse nature of the condition itself. And so what we did is we developed it with members of the Parkinson's community. We ended off inviting 5 people with Parkinson's over to the centre, recording their tremors and then talking to them and interviewing them to find out about how the Parkinson's affected them, their relationship with music. And then over a 6-week period, the creative team over at Da Haus in Berlin took all that material and their musical preferences and created a musical composition that was unique to them. And importantly, it embedded the tremor recordings into the song itself. So it captures both the physical aspects of the tremor in the song, but also their relationship with Parkinson's itself.
How does it do that? Is that the rhythm of it or?
The exact specifics were undertaken by the musical technicians, but they essentially took the tremogram and
What's a tremogram?
Tremogram. It's a recording of the frequency of the individual's tremor. And so if you listen to some of the tracks, I think it's a bit more obvious than others, where you can kind of hear the oscillations in the background. And certainly some of the participants who took part, one of them particularly said, you know, when she relaxed into it, she could actually feel her tremors going along in time with the music.
I don't suppose when you're watching Brentford, it's going to be in time with the music.
I was thinking that. such is my excitement about the podcast. I'm tremoring a bit right now, tapping on the table. And yes, at Brentford, it's incredibly fast. So have you got fast and slow tracks for fast and slow tremors?
I mean, I think it was more about what was unique to the individual. I mean, at the end of the day, what we were really trying to capture was that there's this really close intersection between your mood and how you're feeling and how the physical manifestation of your symptoms. So it may not just be tremor, it could be any aspect of Parkinson's, but there's a lot of things that go into it that can make those symptoms feel worse. And so what we wanted to try and do is to really sort of capture that so that people can start thinking about, you know, it's not just about medications and pills, it's about thinking more broadly, how do we help manage these symptoms a bit better? And different approaches for doing that.
So it's not just an artistic project, it's a therapeutic project, you hope?
The way we came at it, it was very small numbers of people, very small numbers of participants. And the way we came at it was, you know, ideal day-to-day seeing people with Parkinson's, giving people diagnosis. And there's a lot of misconceptions about the illness. And it comes back to it, how it affects each person is unique to each person, both in terms of the pattern of symptoms and how it progresses over time. What we wanted were ways to both better communicate that, but also the idea that actually when it comes to treatments and therapies, they need to be tailored to each individual person. So you've got not only the medications, but in terms of other approaches you use to try and help manage some of the symptoms, you have to pick what's right for you.
What are the misunderstandings that people have?
I see people who come along to clinic who have, it's almost a sort of catastrophic, this idea that Parkinson's is, you know, within a year, people are being in a wheelchair, et cetera. And I think, you know, actually, I look after people at all ends of the spectrum, from people who, you know, have been diagnosed in their teens and early 20s all the way through to the opposite end. Everybody wants to know, well, what's the future hold for me? And the honest truth is none of us know. And actually, it's this uniqueness of the condition that we don't really understand and we need to understand better, but also trying to get the right pattern of treatments right for the right person.
Christian, what do you say to those people who very cynically say, look, you're a neurologist, you should be doing the neurology. There's so few neurologists, you should not be focusing on the arts.
I mean, I'd counter that. So I spend most of my time in research. I'm a researcher. I run a large study looking at trying to answer why Parkinson's disease is so variable. It's a longitudinal neuroimaging study, and we spend a lot of time getting to know and understand people in depth and about how Parkinson's affects them to try and understand, well, what are the underlying brain circuits and mechanisms that drive that? With the underlying thinking that there are different types of Parkinson's at the cell level, and ultimately you may require different types of treatments in order to prevent or better manage this moving forwards.
Your fellow consultants, do you ever get a bit of pushback from them?
Not about this. I mean, it was a really unique project. It was a really unique opportunity to get involved. And I looked at it in terms of what was created. I mean, the idea of creating a musical track that was unique for each person was a huge ask. I didn't know what they were going to create. In actual fact, I didn't get to listen to the tracks until after the participants. So I had to sit there. Participants had their headphones on listening to the tracks, and all I could judge was their response to the musical tracks. It was a nerve-wracking.
And what was their response?
They all loved it. I mean, I think it's fair to say if someone makes a musical track for you, it's something that's important. And The other thing that really struck me was the way that each person took something different from it. It was a very in-depth process. You know, we asked people to really reflect on their Parkinson's and their journey with that. For some people, it was coming to terms or the recognition that it's a journey of several to coming to terms with things. And for others, it was, I think one participant mentioned that it allowed them to make peace with their tremor. It used to really bother her, not the fact that she had the tremor, but how people looked at her in public. She felt she needed to apologize for having that tremor. And it, when we spoke to her afterwards, it allowed her to sort of reflect on that and actually say, well, no, this is part of me being me. And, you know, I shouldn't have to hide that away.
So I like the name of your project, Tremor versus Tremors. It sounds like a sort of exotic divorce case. Kramer versus Kramer, or Russell versus Russell. But in fact, what you're doing is you're saying there are tremors and tremors. So in fact, the project should really be called Symptoms versus Symptoms, really, because that would capture the full array of symptoms. Isn't that what you're trying to do?
I mean, you could frame it in different ways. I quite liked the fact that whilst we were capturing the tremors and portraying it in that way, it was also trying to reveal that there's the hidden face of Parkinson's. Yeah. It's much deeper than, you know, you look at someone, you see a bit of tremor or a bit of slowness. No,
the bottom of the iceberg.
Yeah, there's so much more going on behind the scenes that you actually need to understand. And in order to successfully treat the symptoms, you need to understand the broader array of how it's affecting the individual.
We like your title. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Christian Lambert, telling us about Tremors versus Tremors. And let's end with another track from that project.
Can I just add that the proceeds and the royalties from the Tremors versus Tremors are going to Parkinson's UK. So if you want to listen to it, put it on repeat, leave it for the evening.
And where will you find it?
It's available on Apple Music, Spotify, and also through the website.
And we'll make it available through our website, moversandshakerspodcast.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Now let's have a quick listen.
One more time, I'll spin it around. This never ending day I found. I'll catch the sunset and never let go. Stay with the brightest glow. One more time, I spin it around. This never ending day I found. I got to sense it and never let go.
You've been listening to Movers and Shakers, a podcast about living with Parkinson's. The show is sponsored by Judge Nick Mostyn's Old Chambers and by the generous contributions of private donors. The show is produced by Nick Hilton for Poddo. Our theme music is by Alex Stubbs and cover artwork by Till Lucat. Please subscribe to get new episodes straight into your podcast app and do rate and review if you enjoyed the show. We have a brand new all-singing, all-dancing website with lots more information about each episode. You will find it at www.moversandshakerspodcast.com. And please email any thoughts or questions to feedback@moversandshakerspodcast.com.